This is Money Talk.
I can take money and I can make it into more money.
25 years on the air with advice on money matters. Here's your host, Bob Brinker.
Welcome to the program. Hi, everybody, and thank you for joining us. Yes, it's America's Money Program. Yes, we are here. And our toll-free line, 1-800-934-2221. We have our guest segment coming up. Make sure you're with us for that one. It's going to be a good one. Let me bring you up to date on the week that we're looking at ahead, because we have a number of economic-related data points coming out this week that we'll all be watching, starting on Tuesday with the retail sales number for the month of November. Now, you know, retail sales in October shot up 1.2%, well above expectations. It was really a good report for the month of October. And November is looking like it will be in the positive column. The consensus estimate of economists is calling for a 0.6% gain in retail sales in the month of November. We'll see how that comes out. That number will come out on Tuesday morning. Also on Tuesday, we'll get the Producer Price Index report coming out Tuesday, and the consensus for the core rate, which is the rate that the Federal Reserve watches closely, the consensus for the core rate is 0.2% for the month of November, and that would be very small, especially considering that in October, the Producer Price Index declined 0.6%. So producer prices have been going nowhere fast. And on Wednesday, we'll get the consumer price index. And the consumer price index for the month of November is expected to be the same as it was in the month of October. Now, these are consensus economist forecasts, and the actual data will be coming out this week. The Wednesday announcement of the consumer price index is looking for a 0.2% increase. If so, that would match the increase in October. But the year-over-year number remains extremely low. Right now, the year-over-year number is 1.2. But if we get a 0.2 number on Wednesday for the month of November, then the year-over-year number will actually decline to 1.1. That would be because the takeout number from the previous year would actually be a little higher than the replacement number. So the year-over-year CPI, Consumer Price Index, announced Wednesday, could be 1.1. Right now, it's 1.2%. Now, the core Consumer Price Index, which is very closely watched by the Federal Reserve, is estimated to be up only 0.1% in November after being zero in the month of October. So far, those looking for high inflation, well, they're still wondering where their forecasts went wrong. Inflation is low, and in my opinion, it's going to stay rather low for a while to go. Now, on Thursday this week, we'll get the industrial production estimate for the month of November, and we're looking for a small gain in that figure. And we'll also on Thursday get housing starts and also building permits. Both of those are expected to be in the area of 550,000 to 560,000. Obviously, we have seen signs of stabilization in the housing market, but it is a very long, drawn-out process given the supply-demand equation, especially given the inventory of unsold properties and given the number of foreclosures and short sales that have placed pressure on the housing price structure. And then on Friday, we're expecting a nice increase in the November leading economic indicators. All of this coming out this week. This is going to be what you would call an active week of economic flow through the canyons of Wall Street. So we'll all look for that. And again, as we enter this new week, the S&P 500, despite all the naysayers out there, despite all the bears that are stalking out there, this is reality. The S&P 500 today stands at 1240.40. That is its highest level since 2008. The NASDAQ 100 is at its highest level since before the recession, all the way back in 2007. S&P 500 at its highest level since September of 2008, with a year-to-date total return of 13%. I'm Bob Brinker. This is Money Talk.
Money Talk. This is Money Talk.
Welcome to the program. Thank you for joining us. Our guest during this segment is Josh Cosman, and Josh is a business reporter for the New York Post and the author of The Buyout of America. The Buyout of America is now out in paperback form. Josh, we thank you for your time. It's great to have you with us.
Great. Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Josh, you know, I follow, and our listeners follow the economic flow, economic news flow real closely. And I'm seeing a lot of things in the economic news flow these days. One of the things I'm not seeing in the news flow these days, the financial news flow, is concern that that private equity is going to kill the American economy. Bring us up to date on your theory.
Sure. The paperback of the book with a lot of new updates came out November 30th, so just a week or so ago.
Yeah.
And private equity firms, who have always been good at kind of keeping quiet, are kind of back at it again. Debt is cheap, and unlike you or I, if we're trying to buy a home, if you are a private equity firm and buying a company, it's not as easy as it was in 2006 or 2007. But because of the cheap interest rates and because banks want to finance LBOs, they are definitely back at it again. Just in the last few weeks, private equity firms inked deals for Del Monte and J. Crew. And I think people both in the business world and perhaps people like us in the media have kind of not paid much attention to the dangers of private equity, largely because of these cheap interest rates that not only have allowed them to come back to life very quickly, but also allowed them to refinance the debt in some of the 3,000 companies they bought in the run of 2004 to 2007. So not many of those companies went bankrupt.
Now, our listeners, Josh, they've seen these situations where, you know, one of these days you pick up the paper or you go online and you notice, okay, that this private equity company has gone out and decided that they're going to take this public company private by buying up the public shares, and then they take it private. And then some time goes by, and then next thing you know, there they come back out, going public again. Explain to our listeners why this happens and how this business model pays off for the private equity managers.
Sure. Private equity firms, just to give a little primer for your listeners, we're you know, there's a lot of definitions of private equity, but I think the way you're referring to it and the way I refer to it in the book is strictly as leverage buyouts. And the way a leverage buyout works is the buyer, a firm like Kohler, Kravis Roberts, or the Blackstone Group, puts down about 25 to 30% of the equity and has the company borrow the rest to finance the acquisition. So if we were buying a home, we put the 20% down and then borrow the rest. A buyout firm, a private equity firm, puts the money down but then has the company borrow the rest. The way they make money typically is if that company can reduce the debt and then they can resell the business, well, their equity rises. If a company is bought for, let's say, $1 billion, and let's say it has $800 million of debt, and you can reduce that debt to $600 million, resell it for $1 billion, you double your money. And it's really not that much more complicated than that much of the time.
Now, a lot of our listeners saw the original Wall Street back in the 1980s, which is which has now been followed by a sequel, which has probably been less warmly received than the original, like most sequels. But if you go back to the original, which was quite a film, quite a fun film for financial types to watch.
Sure.
You go back to Gordon Gekko and his famous speech up in front of that, I think it was a paper company, fictional paper company meeting, and he's up there trying to take over the company and do all these private equity type things, of course. And he gave his famous speech where he told the audience that, you know, his view was that, that greed is good. Do you have a problem with that line of thinking?
I mean, I did 2 years of investigative journalism, investigative reporting on the book. And I do when greed hurts people and hurts companies. I guess when it's someone like a Carl Icahn that buys in and out of stock and has a lot of slippery games, to be honest, I don't think he's really hurting anyone. And in some ways, it's kind of fun to watch. But when, for example, a KKR buys Sealy Mattress, and a lot of buyout firms, by the way, bought and sold Sealy between each other, and they're taking huge fees and they're laying a lot of people off, and it's not making the company stronger, but it's making the company much weaker. Sealy today has less than a 20% market share. When private equity firms first bought the company, it had a leading 28% market share. When it's not helping the business and there's a lot of unnecessary layoffs, I do have a real problem with that. I would anyway, but boy, during this time when we're in a recession and there's too many people out of work, I think it's a real problem. Private equity firms quietly own companies employing 1 out of every 10 Americans. So they are America's biggest employers. And when they're putting companies in debt and making them weaker and in the process laying off people unnecessarily, I think it's a pretty serious issue.
So really what Gordon Gekko was saying was greed is good for Gordon Gekko. Greed is good for Gordon Gekko and his fellow managers. But what you're saying is greed is not good. That sort of greed is not good for the people who happen to draw a paycheck from the company, because chances are they're going to be joining the unemployment line.
It's pretty terrible. We, in the buyout of America, it's in the appendix, so understandably people don't pay much attention to it. But I did a study of the 10 biggest buyouts of the 1990s, so I wasn't cherry-picking, to see how those companies have done 10 years later, often after the private equity firm has already made its profit. And in 6 of the 10 cases, the companies clearly were worse off when comparing them versus their competitors. In 3 cases, it was mixed. In 1 case, I think they did improve the business. In the 80s, in that Gordon Gekko era, in the 25 biggest leveraged buyouts, 52% of those companies that were acquired ended up going bankrupt. Again, often after the PE firm had already exited with quite a profit. And this decade, in 6 of the 10 biggest LBOs, and in this decade, we had the biggest LBOs of all time, 6 of those 10 companies are already considered distressed by Moody's, or have went bankrupt. So, unfortunately, I think there is a real track record, for private equity firms. It's very poor, and it's not just finance. Unfortunately, when a company struggles, it means layoffs. And it means an uncompetitive business. Right now, we need our company strong in this country. We're facing quite a bit of competition. And to have private equity firms weakening this many companies is a real problem.
Josh Cosman is our guest. His book, The Buyout of America, is now out in paperback. Now, Josh, I've been on record for many, many years on our broadcast of telling our listeners that, in my opinion, the United States has the very best government that money can buy. My opinion is that lobbyists rule in Washington. They rule in the morning, the afternoon, and they rule at night. And I'm going to discuss something with you that's going to prove my point. Hedge fund managers have the glorious distinction of being able to take profits out of their firm that qualify as long-term profits, which so many do in these types of firms, private equity and hedge fund firms. They have the glorious ability to take out the profits at a maximum federal capital gains tax rate of 15%. In other words, to have their profits taken out in capital gains tax form. This bestows on these private equity managers, these hedge fund managers, the most incredible tax benefit, because otherwise they would have to pay more than double, even with the current new tax deal. They'd have to pay a maximum rate of 35%. They're all in the top bracket because these are people that are making millions, tens of millions, and yes, in some cases, hundreds of millions of dollars on an annual basis. And yet, because of the lobbyists, because of the money, follow the money. Because of the money, they are able to keep this incredibly beneficial provision of a 15% top tax rate when they take the money out of the firm and put it into their own account. This I find astounding, and yet, despite the deficit, despite the national debt, despite the supposed caring about it, they've retained this in the new package. I need your reaction to that.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. You know, the thing is private equity, the partners of private equity firms, not the funds, but the partners, the Henry Kravises, the Steven Schwarzmans, they take no risk in their funds. They make enough off fees, off their own investors and off the companies they manage, that they take no risk. And yet, the gains they get from buying and selling companies, carried interest, they pay, they collect, when they collect on those commissions, they pay the 15% capital gains rate, and they don't pay the 35% ordinary income rate. It's pretty insane. A neat story that's in the new version of the book, the paperback, it wasn't in the hardcover, is I uncovered that Tony James of the Blackstone Group, who is a big Republican donor, a huge Republican booster if you look at his track record, that he held a fundraiser in this last year for Nancy Pelosi in his home. And, gee, the House three times passed raising carried interest. But Nancy Pelosi was voted absent twice, and once she voted against it. And I think that's part of the reason this has never moved forward, is that people like Tony James can raise a lot of money for people like House Speaker Pelosi, and therefore kind of stall the progress on raising carried interest. And it's terrible at a time we've got to make some serious cuts in the deficit, and people of all political stripes can debate which things should be cut. But the fact we're keeping this entitlement, this loophole in place, is insane.
Yes, this entitlement for the ultra super wealthy, we should point out. And if I'm not mistaken, Josh, perhaps you can recollect, during the presidential campaign of then Barack Obama, he actually brought this particular loophole up, and he discussed getting rid of this and bringing the tax rate up for these people that were benefiting from this this tax loophole. Of course, we're always hearing about closing loopholes. Here's a loophole you could drive a Mack truck through, and nobody changes it.
Amazing. And, you know, the third rail for private equity, it doesn't get discussed much just because I think people don't know about it, which is that the companies private equity firms acquire through leverage buyouts can take the interest they pay on their loans off their taxes. It's called interest tax deductibility. So at a time we're considering ending mortgage interest tax deductibility, there's been no discussion that I've seen, or not much, about ending interest tax deductibility for leverage buyouts. And yet, a Notre Dame study done last year shows that companies acquired in leverage buyouts see their tax rates fall from about 22% to 10%. And there is no evidence that I see that private equity firms improve companies. In fact, there's lots of evidence they hurt their businesses.
So let's be honest. The politicians in Washington are running interference for these people to protect their wealthy interests. I mean, I've never seen anything more obvious. Your calls for Josh Cosman when we return, 1-800-934-2221, right here on America's Money Program.
This is Money Talk. This is Money Talk.
From the beaches of Waikiki to the shores of Blog Island Sound, one number serves all, 1-800-934-2221. Josh Cosman, our guest, is the author of The Buyout of America. The Buyout of America is now out in paperback form with some updates. Well, you know, when I look at this particular provision, Josh, of the hedge funds managers, the private equity guys, taking this money out at 15%, when in fact, of course, that is their business. That's their whole business model, buying and selling companies and all the rest of it. I have to tell you, my reaction to this is that really two things. In this fiscal environment, take all of my comments within the context of the current fiscal environment, which is a train wreck gone bad with the new policy they're just announcing. I have two thoughts. Firstly, politicians obviously have no conscience. And secondly, they have no shame.
Well, they certainly have no courage, and maybe all the rest of the stuff, too. One thing I note in the book is four of the last eight Treasury secretaries have now worked for private equity-owned companies. So private equity firms have a lot of influence in Washington. At the same time, I'd like to think if there was more of a spotlight on the topic like you're providing it today, there would be outrage. There was when that original Wall Street movie came out in 1987, 1988, and there were changes that were attempted in the late 80s, but it was Alan Greenspan who said, well, we shouldn't change these tax laws because private equity will go away. It did go away for some time, for a couple of years, but then it came back because interest rates were lowered by Greenspan, and private equity firms could refinance their companies that were falling apart, and at the same time, they could start engineering new leverage buyouts. And just in November, the Dallas Fed president, Richard Fisher, warned of an upcoming buyout bubble, not something you expect from a Fed president. And his words were measured, but his message was very clear. He said private equity firms tighten operations and don't expand the workforce. And he said he was concerned about that. Mm-hmm. So we are seeing buyouts coming back. The comeback is happening kind of the same way it did in the early to mid-90s because of low interest rates. And I hope that there can be more attention put on the topic, and thank you for doing so right now.
And Ben Bernanke would be the first to say, if we could catch him in a moment of frankness, that the maestro never goes away, right? He's always looking over his shoulder. Let's get Mike on the line on a car phone in Pennsylvania. Mike, you're on with Josh. Go ahead.
Yes. Hi, gentlemen. Excellent. Very intelligent discussion. I'm listening, just driving along, and I appreciate the detail you've given. I too, am very interested in this carried interest concept and more details. Could you explain what risks private equity fund managers may have? Where can this go bad on them? And then second thing, perhaps, or three things. So what risks? Two, what types of, I heard Warren Buffett takes advantage of this type of thing as well. And then three, can a little guy take advantage of this, meaning someone buying a fast food franchise somewhere, can he take advantage of carried interest? And then just any further discussion you can have on it. I'm going to hang up and listen to you on the radio.
Go ahead, Josh.
Very, very intelligent discussion. Thank you very much.
Go ahead, Josh.
Great. Kim, thanks, Bob. So what could go bad for the private equity firms, I believe, is that by them not kind of just, taking the punishment and paying taxes like the rest of us, they kind of allow people like me as journalists or Bob to kind of raise the topic of, okay, well, let's look deeper into this. What other breaks are you getting? Because actually that interest tax deductibility break since 2000 has cost Uncle Sam $70 billion. Carried interest has cost them about $20 billion. You put it together, that's $100 billion. That's a lot of money. They don't want anyone looking at that $70 billion number because that would make leverage buyouts themselves unprofitable. So the risk that this debate continues is that people start looking deeper. There is some definite truth that little guys can also take advantage of this. I wrote an interesting article this week for the New York Post on something called founder stock. This doesn't have a lot to do with private equity, but it's an interesting topic since taxes are, very topical right now. And it's that people who found their companies and take stock and then sell their stock also pay that 15% capital gains instead of ordinary income. A professor named Victor Fleischer, who started the whole carried interest debate in 2007 with a paper he wrote, now is taking the stand that he believes the founders of companies ought to pay ordinary income on their stock because they got that stock because of the labor they put into their companies. if you change that from capital gains to ordinary income, if you double their tax rate, that would be about $100 billion a year extra for Uncle Sam, and that's a year. So over 10 years, that's $1 trillion. So there are ways to cut this deficit that Alan Simpson, Erskine Bowles, and President Obama don't want to talk about. But there are some very serious ways that we could reduce the deficit by closing tax loopholes, both on the little guys, who I do feel some more empathy towards, and to the private equity guys.
And what about Warren Buffett? He's never been one to shy away from a tax loophole, has he?
No, he sure hasn't. But, you know, Buffett himself thinks that private equity is pretty destructive, and he said that we should raise carried interest. But, yes, Warren Buffett himself makes a lot of extra money from tax loopholes.
Pierre's on the line in New Hampshire. Pierre, you're on with Josh. Go ahead.
Hi. I was caught up in a buy-up of a company in 87. And it was a very large worldwide company, actually, and they were very solvent, and they bought up the company and they split it all up into pieces. And I had a retirement benefit package that I had went through my union, and I had like 14.7 years. So they closed the retirement benefit package and refunded a new package, picking up all the people that had 15 years and over, and paid off the people that had 15 years under. And so I got a pittance of my retirement benefit package in a lump sum cash payout, and they got to keep over $42 million of what could have been my retirement package when I get to 55 or so, which I'm at to now. And basically disintegrated the company into just chunks of little pieces, and was a very good, viable company.
Oh, you've heard this story before, John. Josh.
Yeah, unfortunately, this story, private equity firm since 2000, and we're talking an 87 buyout, you know, and I want to address Pierre directly, but, you know, in the decade since 2000, in the time since 2000, private equity firms became, you know, 6, 7, 8 times larger than they were in that late 80s heyday. But it doesn't make what happened to Pierre any less tragic. I mean, right now, you have a bankruptcy that's getting a lot of publicity of Tribune, you know, huge media conglomerate. And, you know, I live in New York, and I know at WPIX television, there are a lot of very upset people who lost a lot of their lifetime savings because Tribune took on too much debt. That was Sam Zell led that buyout.
That's Channel 11 in New York, right?
That's exactly right. Channel 11 in New York.
And that was the station that for many, many years carried the Yankees, I know.
Yes, Phil Rizzuto. And,
yeah.
11's an institution in New York.
Yeah.
The two newscasters for their 10 o'clock newscast were just laid off, basically, or demoted, so they could put in one anchor to save money.
Yeah. That's a decision that they have a right to make. But one thing that does bother me is that it seems to me that a company can be sitting there with a clean balance sheet, no debt at all, which actually makes them even more vulnerable. If they're public, a company can be sitting there, a public company, you know, the principals don't have majority control. The company's public, and the stock is spread out a bit, so there's no majority control in the executive office. And then you have the situation where the company is a sitting duck, because one of these private equity firms can come in and say, "Wow, look at this clean balance sheet. We could lever this thing up and make a fortune." And they lever it up by borrowing multiples of what you could imagine, and then they gut the workforce, like Gordon Gekko was planning to gut the workforce of his hypothetical paper, his fictional paper company in the film Wall Street. They gut the workforce, and sometimes, as you pointed out, a good number of times, they head the company right into bankruptcy court. Now, this does not seem right to me. It doesn't seem fair in any sense. Is there anything the company can do, a public company can do, in order to secure itself against this kind of a raid? Is there anything it can do in the corporate charter, anything it can write into things to prevent this from happening?
That's a great question. There are some things it can do. It's not a great option, but a company can always borrow money itself and pay dividends to its own shareholders, lifting its stock, or pay buy back its own stock, lifting up the price of the shares. Of course, that does mean it's taking on debt, but it might be better than being acquired if it's looking out for the long-term interest of its employees. Other than that, sometimes it's kind of hard. Now, private equity firms typically target companies that are not growing quickly.
Right.
So companies that are growing, they're also not targeting distressed companies because those companies can't take on the debt. They like slow growth businesses. Right now, private equity firms, for example, are targeting Sara Lee, kind of a slow growth meat business. So if a company is growing quickly, they probably will be trading at a too high a multiple for private equity firms to think of buying. But to answer your question, I mean, I think that directly for the companies that are potential targets, they can borrow the money themselves. But again, it's not a great outcome, and shareholders want the best price they can get. And if a private equity firm offers a good premium, you know, unfortunately, that is the way the capitalist system works. And I do like capitalism, and that does mean that if they offer a good enough price, likely any public company is for sale. So there is some truth to that. I think the way things could change is change the tax laws that allow private equity firms to buy companies and reduce the tax rate they pay by half. That we can change through the tax laws. This carried interest we can change through the tax laws. We can make private equity less profitable. And for those private equity firms, and there are a few, who actually go out and try to build businesses, none of these changes will matter because they're not growing businesses or making their profits through tax loopholes. But most private equity firms are.
Our guest is Josh Kosman, and Josh now has a paperback version out of his book, The Buyout of America. And Josh does financial reporting for the New York Post in Gotham City. So, Josh, if you are a CEO listening to our broadcast, and I can assure you there are more than a few that fit that category, and you have a public company and you don't have control of the company in the inner circle, so you're vulnerable to outside takeovers and this kind of tomfoolery that we've been talking about, and you're a cash cow, you're not a rapid grower, probably not a high-tech company, a cash cow along the lines of an industrial company or some kind of a plain vanilla sort of a company, just kind of bouncing along, producing a lot of cash and profits and just not growing real fast. They describe this in Wall Street, as you know, as a cash cow. And you're sitting there, you've got a clean balance sheet. I mean, you are obviously vulnerable to this sort of a raid. And so if you're in that position, maybe you need to hire a specialist, which ironically will probably be based in Wall Street, where all of these sharks are based, and perhaps sit down and say, okay, this is what we need to do to remain an independent company, or we may go the way of the victims of Gordon Gekko.
Well, that is something. I mean, certainly if you run your operation tightly, that makes you less vulnerable. Because then a private equity firm looking at your balance sheet, there's not a lot of fat for it to cut. So that is one thing that one can do. But I think as you're doing and as I'm doing, if we put more attention on this and people become aware that, what happens to many businesses bought by private equity firms, I think as people become more aware, then I think there will be more resistance to these kind of takeouts. There is some awareness, I think, now, much more than a year or two ago. But there's still plenty to go. And again, I just think the facts that are laid out in the Buyout of America speak for themselves. I'm not doing cherry picking. People from the industry, or basically the industry lobbying group, has pretty much railed against the book, and that you'd expect. But they haven't argued with the facts, and I don't think there's a lot to argue with.
Well, I think when you look at the facts, I'm reminded of a cartoon that I saw years ago a gigantic gentleman, and he's standing there with just money is just pouring down on this caricature, Josh. More money than you could ever imagine is pouring down on this guy. And the question that is posed to this individual is, how much is enough? And his answer is very brief. His answer is more. And more is it. And when I think of this cartoon, I think of these private equity guys, and they just want more. I mean, we've seen the stories. These guys have hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars. They have art collections. They have whatever toys they could even dream up, and they want more. And it's I just find it, in a way, I find it amusing that they want more.
It is. Leon Black, one of the who heads the Apollo Management, one of the bigger buyout titans, has a Picasso, an original Picasso in his bathroom, just to paint a picture. they are interesting to follow. One way that I think people can fight back is most of the money in their funds comes from state pensions. And these are literal state pensions, state of Oregon, state of Washington, state of New York, state of Michigan.
Yeah.
These are their biggest investors. And, you know, these pensions ultimately are run by the state governments. If it becomes politically unpopular to fund leverage buyouts, they'll basically stop. And by the way, for these state pensions, the returns they get from private equity funds is no better than the S&P 500. So it's not like they're making great returns. And I believe the more attention that people can pay through the media or through phone calls or letters that people might write, the less likely pensions are to invest in them. And if that happens, that would certainly change the private equity industry.
Well, Josh, we appreciate your joining us here on this broadcast. And Josh's new paperback version of The Buyout of America is just out about a week ago. And we wish you continued success.
Thank you very much. Definitely appreciate the time, Bob.
This is America's Money Program.
Money Talk. This is Money Talk.
I want to thank Josh Cosman, the Buyout of America author, for joining us on the broadcast. Money Talk on-demand information posted up on the homepage at bobbrinker.com, 24/7 access to our current broadcast. You also can go back, listen to many of our recent weekend broadcasts, including our exclusive guest interview segments. It's all right there. And, yes, it's downloadable, so you can take it with you. Check out the information at bobbrinker.com. So we get ready for a new market week, 3 weeks to go in calendar year 2010, S&P at 1240.40, with a year-to-date total return of 13%, but that's not a final number for 2010. We still have 14 trading sessions to go, and yes, you can transact all the way through until right before the ball comes down on New Year's Eve. The market will trade through the day on Friday, December 31st, so that people can make their tax-related transactions right up to the last possible moment. And we want to thank our producer, Meredith Oakes, our program coordinator, Ravi Chandran, and our technical director, that is Angel Bordon. Mostly we thank you for joining us right here on America's Money Program. That's all she wrote. If it can wait till next time, we'll talk about it then, right here on Money Talk.